Welcome to the Reiki Show, hosted by Bronwyn and Franz Diener of the International House of Reiki. Bronwyn and Franz teach Reiki around the globe and are the authors of the Reiki Sourcebook, the Japanese Art of Reiki, the Reiki Techniques card deck, and the soon-to-be-released A to Z of Reiki. The music you are listening to, Reiki Khan, is available at the International House of Reiki website, www.reiki.net.au. Hi, my name is Bronwyn.
And my name is Franz.
And today we have with us Kathleen Prasad. And Kathleen is the founder and director of Animal Reiki Source in California. Now, Kathleen, you've been running a business as a Reiki teacher and practitioner. We'd sort of like to know how you realized that this was the focus that you wanted to take with Reiki. What happened to you that made you think, yes, I want to do Reiki with animals?
Well, it was sort of something that I think happened without me planning it, which as Reiki often works that way, I think. And I learned Reiki back in 1998, actually, for self-healing initially. And I began, as soon as I learned it, doing self-treatments every day, also from a local Reiki master once a week. And I was having these big, powerful healings, and all this stuff was getting cleared, and, you know, I was feeling the energy in my hands, was beginning to feel it, and it was like a whole new language I was learning. It was very exciting. And I would sit in the evening on my couch and give myself Reiki, and my dog would come over and lay across my feet in a weird, like, uncomfortable position that he doesn't usually do. And he would only do it when I was doing Reiki. And so one day, you know, first I just would stare at him like, you know, that's weird. And then one day the light bulb popped on. Oh, he's trying to get some Reiki. And so I thought, oh, well, I'll sit down next to him and, you know, do Reiki with him. And sure enough, he laid down very flat and he took a big sigh and he went right to sleep and my hands heated up and I could just tell that he absolutely loved the treatment. So that was kind of my first inkling that animals liked Reiki. And then at the same time, you know, I started having similar experiences with friends' animals or animals I didn't know that would sort of come up to me and put their bodies into my hands, and a horse that I was sponsoring at the time, I started doing Reiki with him, and I was volunteering at a shelter. I was a full-time teacher at that time, and I thought I was going to be a teacher forever, middle school, public middle school, so like 12 and 13-year-olds, and I loved it. And then all of a sudden, all this animal stuff was going on, and I was like, you know, I don't have time for my job because I'm doing so much Reiki with animals. At the same time, I was kind of thinking that I wanted to change my career. I was starting to think, well, do I want to be teaching 12 and 13-year-olds forever? Do I want to be teaching at this particular school forever? And I actually have a journal entry that says it was like spring 2000. It says, you know, I think I want to do something with Reiki and animals, but I just don't, nobody does that, and I can't really see how I could even do it. It's just like Greek to me. I just don't. And so it's so great because I saved that journal, and what I started doing was every Reiki animal experience I had, I started putting in the pages after I wrote that. And it really just unfolded within, I'd say, a year. So by 2001, I ended up getting my master and Reiki initiation, and by, you know, 2002, I was teaching, and it just totally unfolded. The animals were, like, coming to me faster than I could even have imagined, all different kinds of animals and all different people connected to these animals, and so it just was a natural progression.
Oh, that's a lovely story, and I think for different kind of people, Reiki means something different. Some people like to teach people like to work with animals, and other people maybe use it in their music career, for example.
Yeah, I mean, luckily I had been teaching for over 10 years, and so I completely understood, you know, that I love teaching, and that it was a special gift that I had. And so when the Reiki animal thing happened, it was just like, oh, that's why I've been doing this all these years. know, so it was kind of nice the way it unfolded that way.
Yeah. And do you have a practice now, or do you actually go to the clients?
I do go to the clients. I do have a private practice. I would say most of my clients are horses, dogs, and cats. And I go to people's homes and I go to the barns to work with the animals. And I also have three volunteer organizations that I work with, an animal shelter that's local to me, and I work with dogs there. And I also work with a sanctuary that's nearby that has a lot of senior and special needs animals, and I work with them regularly and I actually teach classes there, which it's a great place to learn Reiki. And then I also work with Guide Dogs for the Blind, which is 5 minutes from my house, which is wonderful. And so I'm teaching the staff there, and they're using it for the working dogs there. So it's been a really nice addition to their program. It's really been great. So,
and does it matter? I mean, you obviously work, as you said, with cats, dogs, and horses. But, you know, do you sort of change what you do according to what sort of an animal it is? So would you treat a horse differently from a dog?
Well, probably I always use the same way. I think the most important thing, whatever animal, whatever kind of animal that you treat, you should always, number one, treat them as a unique individual and allow them, you know, always ask permission. That's the first thing I always do before I do anything. And I always allow them to decide what the treatment's going to look like, how long it's going to be. Is it going to be hands-on or is it going to be from several feet away? They decide, and they have the freedom to move around. So if I'm doing a horse, I will do it like in their paddock so that they can, you know, I'll stand against one side and they can move back and forth from my hands. If I'm doing a dog or a cat, I'll sit in a room in their home and they can, you know, move away from me or come closer. And if I'm doing, you know, a fish, I would sit, you know, on the edge of the pond and allow them to swim closer or swim farther away. And so it's very similar, just the respect aspect and the allowing them the choice is the most important component, I would say, with any animal that you work with.
Most animals love Reiki, yeah? However, as you say, there are times when animals don't. What do you think might be the reason for that? Why would an animal move away?
In my experience, there it's 99% of the time they do want it. But sometimes, you know, they're kind of like us. You know, sometimes they're just in a bad mood and they don't feel like opening up and healing. You know, they're angry or they want to sulk. You know, or, you know, maybe they're in pain because, like, a horse that I did, you know, he had his teeth done and he was in a terrible mood. And so I came to do Reiki and he's like, forget it. You know, he lifted his leg up and held it in the air and stared at me like, if you come closer, I'll kick you. So I thought, okay, no Reiki today. And I came back the next day and he walked right up to me, put his head in my hands and wanted Reiki on his teeth. So, and then there's, you know, so there's that aspect. And then I think, you know, sometimes, for whatever reason, it could be, I think, if you approach them too aggressively, some animals that are timid or fearful or maybe they've had abuse in their past, and you approach them like, okay, we're doing this now. I'm giving you Reiki now. I always like to use the word of offering Reiki. And so a lot of animals where, you know, when I'll train somebody, and this happens most often with cats, interestingly enough, but I'll train people that have cats and, you know, they will have learned Reiki 1 and 2, you know, for humans, and then they just try to work with their cats, and they'll come to me saying, you know, I have 5 cats and they all hate Reiki. As soon as I, you know, come over to them, they run out of the room or they hiss, you know, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, first of all, you just said that you went over to them, so that's the first mistake. So a lot of times when people just change their mental attitude and instead of leaning forward with your hands on them or fall, you know, walking over to where they are and putting your hands on them, instead to just maybe come into the room quietly and sit in the corner and just begin to just offer Reiki from a distance, all of a sudden their cat is like, oh, it's my choice. I can do this the way I want to. And they'll actually come and jump on their lap. So a lot of times that is really the key. So every animal is different, but it's true that most of them really love it.
I think so too, like what you say about offering, is that we do that often, you know, in treatments with other people. It's really about offering the energy, not so much pushing it in or doing something. And then the client can take whatever he or she wants.
Exactly. And I think it's harder when you're working with animals to keep that frame of mind, because every other medical therapy we use with animals, and even the way that we relate to them, is often, okay, we're doing this now, you know, and we're in charge. So it's really, you have to just keep reminding yourself, okay, now we're doing Reiki, so I'm not in charge. The animal's in charge.
Yeah.
And when a human comes for a treatment, they come for a treatment. It is their decision, I'm going to go and have a Reiki treatment. Whereas an animal doesn't have that choice as such, unless, of course, you do what you're doing, which is offering it.
Absolutely. And I always tell people, too, like when I have my private practice clients, and I will tell them, you know, if your animal decides today's not a good day, then we'll have to do it another time. And there have been times, like the horse example I gave, they're very rare, but an animal will just absolutely say no. And usually what I'll do is I'll try again the next day or a couple of days later. And usually when they see you again and they remember, oh, you respected my decision last time, it's usually a whole different tune the next time you come around. So
yeah,
it just helps to be patient.
In reality, it's just about respect.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Do you have a specific way how you, in the beginning, connect to the animal? Do you have a specific ritual or a specific way of doing it?
I would say something that I try to do before I actually even go into the room where the animal is I try to center myself, ground myself, and sort of get myself very internally peaceful, so that whatever has been going on during the day is not now affecting me. Whatever was on my mind is now clear. So that I can go in without any weird vibes surrounding me, because animals, they're so psychic that if you go in, you know, worrying or upset or stressed, they can sense that, and that can a lot of times also cause them to not be comfortable with the Reiki treatment, because they're picking up stuff from you. So I try to, you know, do a little bit of Reiki on myself and a little bit of meditation before I go, you know, into an animal's house to give the treatment. And then the other thing I do is, if I don't know the animal, I will introduce myself mentally, like in my head. Sometimes I'll do it out loud if the person is comfortable with that. But I'll sort of let them know, because they really pick up all of our thoughts. So I basically just talk to them in my mind and let them know who I am and why I'm there, and that it's totally going to be their choice and as much as of energy as they want or none at all. It's completely up to them, that I'm not going to be forcing contact with them. So, you know, just a lot of the reassuring, positive thinking in my mind. And then I will, you know, specifically ask their permission if I can begin, and then I will just ask Reiki to begin flowing. And a lot of times I'll use the symbols at the beginning as well. That way I can sort of, you know, work with an animal's past and or, you know, future or something mental that's going on, just kind of opening it up.
Let me come back to the guide dogs. You were saying you were doing some Reiki on the guide dogs.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about what the people who are training the guide dogs find? What is the difference between the, you know, prior to receiving Reiki and after receiving Reiki? Do they probably have discussed with you, oh, we find this and this is happening with the guide dogs after you've done Reiki?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Can you maybe give some examples?
Sure. I think that probably the biggest thing is stress relief for them, because the campus that I'm near, the guide dogs campus, is the college campus. It's huge, and there's hundreds of dogs and hundreds of trainers. It's like quite an operation, and they're really wonderful people, and they do great work. But it's very stressful for the dogs, because the dogs live with a family until they're like about a year old, and then they come to guide dogs for training, and they actually live in kennels on the campus and work with a trainer every day. So they grew from a puppy all the way up until, you know, adulthood, with a family in a home. Now they're asked to go and live in this kennel environment and work, you know, work and learn this new language, this new training. And it's very intensive, tough training. So it's very, very hard. The transition is extremely hard for the dogs. What I'm doing is helping them to have another tool to relieve their stress and to help them. You know, a lot of them, they shut down when they get stressed out, and then they can't learn, and then they may get dropped from the program. And so by relieving their stress and helping them to go more into themselves instead of just being out of their mind, you know, they're able to focus and to do the work they need to do. But, you know, nonetheless, there are some dogs that are not cut out for this work. And something that I never knew before I worked with these dogs is that they really choose this work. You cannot make a dog become a guide dog unless they love it. The dogs I work with are sort of in that process of discovering, you know, are they right for this career? Because they have to dedicate their whole life to this. And they do change a person's life, and they make a person able to be independent. And, I mean, it's really a wonderful partnership once they get partnered with their person. But they have to be the right kind of dog to be able to do that. Lately, a lot of the dogs that I've been working with and the group of Reiki practitioners that I've been helping, they work with what we call career change dogs. And those are the dogs that are, they have not, for whatever reason, they've been dropped from the program, and now they have to find a new lease on life. They have to decide, you know, are they going to adopt them into, you know, somebody's home, or are they going to find a different type of work for them to do? And in the meantime, it's extremely stressful for them because they're still living in the kennel. They still are, you know, have not found their family. And so the Reiki sort of helps them through this process. And I believe that it helps the people discern what they need most. So it really sort of deepens the communication between the trainers working with them and the dogs. And so that's been really wonderful for me to see that too.
It must be tough for the dogs because dogs do attach so strongly to people, don't they? So first they have their family, mm-hmm. then they have the trainer, and then who knows, you know?
Yes. I mean, these dogs, the ones that love it and do this work, it's really interesting. It's like this little light goes on in their head, and they understand their mission in life, and they are fully committed to it. And so they work so hard, and then when they get their person, it's like they understand that this is what they've been working towards, and they absolutely love and focus on that person and will give their life for that person. And they do. The guide dogs routinely save their people's lives, you know, keeping them from walking into traffic or getting into a dangerous situation. And it's really interesting because it's almost like they understand that. I believe they do understand it. Mm. And they commit to it, and they want to do it. And they understand how important it is. So they're really special dogs. They're amazing dogs.
With your work in the shelters and the rescue organizations, could you give some hints for practitioners on how they could actually go about becoming involved in any of those organizations? Do they need to Yes. have other qualities or qualifications?
It depends on the shelter. I mean, some shelters, you have to go through a minimal amount of training before they will allow you to interact with the animals there. And I've worked with a few different shelters, and, you know, one of them was a lot more strict, and I had to go through a bunch of classes just to learn how to work with the dogs before I was allowed to actually walk them and do things. And then they allowed me to exercise and walk them and then do Reiki at the end, which was kind of nice. And then there's the shelter I work with now, I do specifically just Reiki. So they actually take the dogs out of the runs for me and bring them to me in a special quiet room, and I just sit and give them the Reiki treatment. So it's kind of a different experience than the last place that I was. The best thing to do if you want to work for a shelter, and I encourage all my students to do this because it's just a wonderful way to gain experience and to help the animals who need it most, is go to the shelter in your neighborhood and walk around it and get the feeling of the place, the energy, the employees, you know, meet some of the staff, talk to people there. Find out if it's a place that you feel comfortable being and that you would like to come back and spend time. And then find out who's in charge of the volunteers and go sit them down and talk to them and tell them about, you and, you know, your work with Reiki, your background, what you think Reiki can offer the animals at the shelter. Reassure them that it's very gentle and non-invasive, and, you know, you can even do it from outside the kennels, cages, if they prefer. So a lot of just basically getting to know the people there and explaining what you're going to be doing, and most shelters are very open to it. Basically anything that will help the dogs or the cats or the animals there. Most of my students that have gone into shelters have had really good positive feedback and experience from the people there. And, you know, some of the employees may stare at them and think they're crazy, but then after a while, and this happened to me too, after a while they start to see the improvements in the animals that you work with. And so now when I go there, they are actually telling me which animals they want me to work on that day. It was something that took time and took relationship building. So you have to sort of be prepared to go in and do the work quietly and for the animals. And you may not be recognized or get kudos until they trust you and you build that relationship, which can take some time.
What are some of the changes that you've seen occur for animals in shelters?
Well, I would say probably the biggest amazing thing that I've seen is it's something about introducing Reiki into the situation of an animal seems to open up that door so that their family comes to them quickly and easily. And I've seen it many times over and over again, an animal that's, you know, basically considered unadoptable, and they'll have a few Reiki treatments and boom, they're adopted. There's one dog that I worked with, it was a Duff Dalmatian, and he had just come in and was completely screaming and freaking out, and I did Reiki and he wanted it directly on his heart, and he just sat down and got real quiet and whimpered quietly and sort of was half asleep, was very deep in the treatment. And I just sort of put it out there to Reiki for highest good for this dog, and I was hoping for the best when I left that day, but I thought, well, you know, a deaf animal who's hyper and freaked out is going to be impossible to place. This is what my human mind was telling me. And then I went back the next week, a few days later, and the dog was gone, so I asked, well, what happened? They said, you won't believe it. The day after you were here giving the dog Reiki, this lady came in and said, you know, I'm sure you're going to think I'm crazy, but I have a deaf Dalmatian at home, and I'm looking for another one as a companion, but I'm sure you don't have one, but I thought I would just stop in.
That's bizarre.
You know? And so, I mean, you know, and there's just, there are countless stories like that where it's just like, you know, you can't believe the coincidence that happened right after the Reiki treatment. Sometimes it happens like as I'm driving away, the person, you know, comes in and you know, this animal that's been there for 9 months is adopted after just one Reiki treatment. So there's some, I mean, I would say, you know, of course it gives stress relief. It can heal cuts and injuries and, you know, all the things that we know Reiki can do. But the most amazing thing for me is seeing it open these doors. And it doesn't always happen that way, but it happens enough that it sort of makes it easier to go into those places and work with dogs that are, quote, hopeless. Because Reiki always gives me that hope.
I think if people listening to this are interested in those sorts of stories, I find those stories so touching. And sometimes, I don't know what it is, but working with animals is sometimes more touching than even working with humans. There's something very unique about the animal world and strengthening our connection with that. And if people are interested, they should read your book, shouldn't they? And Yeah, so Kathleen's got a book called Animal Reiki. And my guess is that you've taken most of the stories that are in Animal Reiki from the journal entries that you were discussing before.
Absolutely, and I was so thankful that I started keeping that journal because over time, really, you lose those details. And if I hadn't have written them down right when I got home each time, I wouldn't have remembered them. So it was a real... it's such a blessing that I even thought to do that, because that really did that really was where the beginning, the genesis of the book came from. So,
yeah, it's a lovely book. I love the stories. It's very touching, and I think that it can teach practitioners a lot of things. You know, if they're wanting to do Reiki on a pig or a goat or a or a turtle or a deer, whatever it might be, to give people confidence in doing that and getting people motivated to do it.
Well, thank you. There's a whole section in the middle on different species of animals and different little observations that we had on working with different species of animals. So if you love animals, I think you will definitely be entertained by the stories.
And there's also your website, too. Could you just tell people your website address?
Yes, my website is www.animalreikisource.com.
Well, thank you so much for today. I'm sure that people who've listened to that have really learned a lot and will feel really inspired by the stories that you've told them.
Oh, thank you. Really fun.
Yeah, thanks very much. I really enjoyed it to see a different aspect of working with the system of Reiki.